Everybody that's able to make it out this afternoon, we can make all the jokes about the slim numbers being related to me or not. That's not going to bother me. Might be true, who knows? But I'm glad that you are here, that you've put the effort in to hear a lesson from God's Word. I intend for this to be a very straightforward and plain lesson, but it was a lesson that I needed to remind myself of. And I'm hoping that everyone has the same feeling as we wrap up today. It's simple, but a good reminder. We're not going to focus on making any new points. The idea is really just to remind ourselves of something that needs to happen, I think, on a daily basis for each of us. Jesus used parables primarily because it was easy for the common person to take a parable presented to them and to make the application to themselves. We have something in a story form that we can parallel to a spiritual application. And so that's why Jesus used it primarily in a lot of his teaching, was because it was simple. It was an effective way to make points. For the last couple of weekends, I've been doing a lot of yard work. First spring in a new house, there's a lot that I want to do to make our yard look nice, and things that I want to change, try to get it, the way that I want it to. I spent some long days pulling weeds, digging holes, planting things in an effort to make my yard nice. And I think everybody here can appreciate that. If you're not into yards, maybe it's a garden. Maybe you like planting tomatoes or blackberries or something to feed yourself off of. And so it's a common thing that we can all draw on and make parallels from. Four points that I want to make just on the simple topic of yard work. The first one being that beautiful lawns or beautiful gardens, they don't just happen. They take a lot of work. There's a lot of effort that goes into making a beautiful lawn or a garden. And if we're to look at Matthew 13, when Jesus is talking about the seed getting cast on the different types of soils, there are all these different types of soils that are unideal. The good soil that produces fruit, is that because that person was just lucky and spiritually they just lived a life that was easy for the message to get to them? Or is it a result of them being honest and humble and being able to hear the word of God, let it penetrate them to the heart, and to make changes from it? I think as we read Matthew 13, that's the idea. If you turn to Matthew 13 and you continue on in the explanation that Jesus gives, Matthew 13, starting in verse 18, he explains this parable. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one on whom the seed was sown beside the road. The one on whom the seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. The one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And the one on whom the seed was sown on the good soil, this is the man who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. So we see there that the good soil is someone who understands the word of God. They're hearing it and they're understanding it. And then it says that they bring forth fruit. And so there's a different outcome for them, because they put work into it. And so that's the same in gardens or in yards, lawns, however you want to call it. Physical application, the spiritual application rings true for us as well. We have to fertilize it spiritually. We have to do that through study and through prayer. We don't just come to church and get all the spiritual nutrients that we need by osmosis of being around other good people. We have to take it home. We have to do our own diligence. If we leave out prayer, if we don't have that relationship that we're building personally with God through prayer, and we're missing a key ingredient for growth. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, I thought it was helpful for us to remember this. In 1 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 6, this is in regards to Apollos versus Paul, the perceived rivalry that some might have had. In verse 6 it says, I planted, that being Paul, Apollos watered, but God caused the growth. So then neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but God who causes the growth. Now he who plants and he who waters are one, but each will receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building. So that's a very big passage to think of in these terms, is that someone's got to plant the seed, someone else needs to water the seed. That's not just a one-time deal. That's not just one instance of, oh, I heard the truth one time, the seed's planted. Somebody watered me one time through a sermon that helped, and I'm taken care of. That's going to be a continual process. It's going to be continual watering, just like it would be for any garden that we need to grow. And then we need to keep in mind that in anything where there's good fruit being born, that was God that gave the increase. So we need to give that proper respect and focus to him. Final point to hammer that down. This is not something that just happens. This is something that we have to continuously work towards. And so that's something that I've been thinking about over the last couple of weekends. Another thought that primarily is going to take over probably the rest of this lesson is the idea of weeds. You know, why are weeds bad? What about weeds make them so frustrating for many of us trying to keep a lawn or a garden clean? Well, the easy one is that, you know, they corrupt what is good. If you've got a row of tomatoes and you've got all these vines popping up that are strangling your tomatoes, those vines have corrupted what was good fruit. Or if you've got your yard and you've got, you know, Bermuda, just you've invested a lot of money into a beautiful Bermuda front lawn, and then you start getting crabgrass and all this other stuff popping up in it, pretty soon you don't even notice the Bermuda. You just notice all the weeds. And so it detracts from what you've invested in. So it corrupts or it devalues that which is valuable or what is good. Another thing about weeds is that they steal the nutrients. They steal the life or the growth from what you're investing in. And spiritually, this is a big point. When we let sin creep into our life, and it's like a weed on our hearts, it's stealing valuable spirit. It's preventing us from being able to be all that we can be as a Christian. Our influence might be the issue, or the time that we're spending doing something sinful or unvaluable instead of doing something that is productive in the kingdom. You know, we're robbing ourselves when we let sin creep in and take over. And then, you know, another thing about weeds is they disguise themselves sometimes to try to fit in. And so, you know, you think about, you know, dandelions or some of these others that'll flower, and the kids run out in there and they're picking, you know, the weeds and bringing up to you and saying, like, I got you a bouquet of flowers. And I'm like, you know, keep picking, get them out of here. They're not the real thing. We're being deceived if we think that they are. And so we need to be, you know, leery of them. The spiritual application being, you know, sometimes sin isn't obvious. Sometimes the situation we put ourselves into, by all accounts, may seem innocent. It may seem harmless. But we have to be diligent to know the difference. We need to be able to identify it. And when we do identify it, remove it. In Colossians chapter 3, that'll be the next passage we can look at together. Colossians chapter 3. And we won't turn back to it, but just, I guess, think back to Matthew chapter 13. The vines, I think, is the way that the New American Standard puts it, or the thorns that choked out what would have been a productive and useful soil. You know, that's the big warning for us, is when we let sin be present in our lives, we're choking out our spiritual growth, our spiritual potential. And when we think back to that parable, there wasn't any redeeming factor for that soil that got choked out by the thorns. It gets cast out and essentially, you know, burned up with all the rest that are unfruitful. There's not really any redeeming factor once we let the thorns latch on and choke us out. And so we have to nip this early. We have to get, we can't let sin prolong and affect us. In Colossians 3, starting in verse 5, I'm not in the right spot. Colossians 3 and verse 5 says, "Therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked, but you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, abuse of speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one." There is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is in. So I like this passage because it's one of those passages that just lays it out there. These are things that they better not be named among you. If you're a Christian, if you're claiming to bear the cross of Christ in your everyday life, these better not be part of your daily routine. They better not be something that someone would characterize as part of your personality. And there's a lot in here that we could identify as spiritual weeds that we need to remove from ourselves. So carrying on with that, kind of extending that point into a couple of other subpoints, we've identified what the spiritual weeds are. How do we remove them? Well, how do you remove, you know, a typical weed in your garden? The biggest mistake people do is they grab it from the top side and they just, you know, rip it up, and basically they remove the foliage. And so does that actually do anything for you? It's really just treating the symptom of, hey, I see a weed is present in my garden, and I've removed what appears to be the problem. The root's still there, and that thing's going to spring back up in no time. And so you really haven't solved any of the root issues. You've treated a symptom. And so a couple of examples, maybe they're a little extreme, but I think this is helpful to remind ourselves. Maybe you've got someone who's a shopaholic, and they're in ridiculous amounts of debt. And they've realized that. And they're like, okay, I'm going to stop going on these shopping sprees. And yet every weekend they go window shopping and just, you know, pace up and down the malls looking in all the stores. What's going to happen in no time? They're going to go in, they're going to buy and extend the problem. They treated a symptom, which was swiping the credit card. They didn't treat the issue, which was, I have an issue with accumulating things and I can't tell myself no, and I put myself in that situation. Maybe a more somber example is maybe there's a couple and the man is cheating on his wife. He's committing adultery. And maybe he gets found out and they work it out and he stops having extramarital affairs. But then he just pivots into pornography. He stopped physically cheating on his wife, but the heart issue hasn't changed at all. He's still doing the same thing as far as the heart's concerned. We could make a lot of examples out of this, and really I just want to highlight the point that when we treat symptoms and we don't dig deeper to the cause of the issue, we're not really doing ourselves any favors. We're just kind of pushing something down the line for a few minutes before we have to deal with it again. We've got to get to the root, and that's what we do with the weeds. 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, well-known verse, says, "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves through with many griefs." There's a lot that we could point to where, you know, people get greedy and they just work themselves into all sorts of heartaches and complications. The Bible warns us that the love of money, being obsessed with accumulating wealth, is a gateway to all these other issues. And so the point being, if we're worried about all the issues, if we're worried about, you know, I work too much and I don't spend enough time with my kids and my kids aren't getting, you know, a fatherly influence in their lives, if we try to treat that by, you know, taking some time off, spending time with the kids, but then we feel that urge to go back because we're missing out on money, and we go back to working, you know, ridiculous overtime and never seeing them, that's the root issue. That's what the focus needs to be on from the start. And so we need to be wise in identifying what's really going on with ourselves. We have to be honest with ourselves and address the problems. Matthew chapter 5, well-known passage also here, Jesus shows us to what extreme measures we need to go to get to the root of the issue. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 27, says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you, for it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell." And so Jesus very plainly here is saying, if you have an issue that's being caused by your eye or by your hand, and you can't tell yourself no, if you can't get to your heart and stop it, it'd be better for you to physically mutilate yourself to prevent you from being able to, than for you to end up in hell. It's a strong point. I think that we could take this verse and say, I think Jesus might really be saying, take it to the extreme measure of your heart. Cut to your own heart. Realize that that's what's going on. But I can't say that he doesn't also mean exactly what he says. Cut it off. Cast it from you. Get rid of it. Don't let it be what drags you into hell. A very strong point we need to remind ourselves of. And then another thing with weeds is, when we remove it, do we remove most of them? And maybe we get tired and we're just kind of like looking down the line and we just see maybe there's a few sparse ones. Do we just kind of call it quits and say like, hey, you know, I've done the whole row this way. Those probably won't be a problem. We'll just leave them. I was tempted to yesterday. Yesterday was rough. I think for maybe nearly an hour and a half, I was bent over, plucking them, going all the way around the house. I wanted to just let some go. But have you ever noticed that a lot of weeds kind of stem off of one central weed? They kind of spread, these little runners that, you know, root themselves and then they expand. And so if you start tugging on them, you might find like, hey, none of these are really deep, and then you find the one that they're all stemming from, and that thing's massive. In many ways, sin is the same, and that kind of goes back to, you know, the love of money being the root of all sorts of evil. Being obsessed with wealth can lead you into drug addictions, adulterous affairs. Like, there's so many different things that are nothing to do with money that you might find yourself caught up in if you're obsessed with pursuing money. I mean, we see that with a lot of celebrities. Seemingly all of them have issues with one vice or another, have nothing to do with the fact that they're super rich. They're seeking out other ways to be happy, and all of them seem to be the wrong choice. And so in many ways, we see that, but do we remind ourselves of it when we're dealing with it personally? When we know that we've got sin in our life, and maybe it's not one of the big ones. You know, we haven't murdered anybody. We're not cheating on our wife. We're not, you know, embezzling millions from our company. You know, maybe we've got a lead foot. Maybe we struggle to tell the truth 99% of the time. Be anything. Maybe we drink when nobody's around. Just anything that you can think of along those lines. Are we as critical to ourselves as we are when we see other people caught up in stuff? Maybe not. Maybe we need to be more diligent about that. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 5. In Galatians chapter 5, starting in verse 7, it says, "You were running well, and who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion did not come from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. I have confidence in you, in the Lord, that you will adopt no other view, but the one who is disturbing you will bear this judgment, whoever he is." And so, if you're not familiar with the context of that passage, there were some issues going on, and the warning here is, you know, don't let people who are problem causers stick around because they're good at what they do. You leave them around, pretty soon the whole group is going to be in an uproar with some issue just because a few troublemakers, you know, got their grips in there. And so the warning for us is, you know, don't let people, don't let sinful activities, you know, get a grip on us and us shrug them off like it's no big deal. Like if we recognize that we're not supposed to be doing something, get rid of it. Don't allow it to perpetuate. Don't allow it to get worse. One final point. This one's probably a little goofier because it's not a direct tie-in. But as a typical red-blooded American man that's totally mentally stable, I get irrationally angry that the weeds decided to pick my yard to grow up in. And so just throwing them out is not good enough. I'm burning those things, and I'm relishing in the fact that I'm burning off the weeds. And so yesterday I built a fire, and I got it going very, very hot. And I had piles of weeds that I tossed onto that thing. And for some reason, a spiritual application or two popped into my head just from that. What is God going to do with the wicked in the final day? The ones that never got rid of the thorns choking them out, or the ones that let sin linger? We know that in heaven there is nothing but righteousness. And so sin, along with everything else, sin itself, are the ones that were caught up in it, never wanted to change. They all have the same fate, not that they're going to be burned up in the lake of fire and brimstone for eternity. And that's something I think maybe we don't like to think about too much, is just how horrifying, how terrible hell is going to be for those that end up there. Just in the fire that I built, I took green weeds that were teeming with life and tossed them on there. And in a matter of seconds, all the water hissed out of them and evaporated, and those things burnt in just seconds. And that's just a fire I built in a trash can in my driveway. Hell was prepared as a place of torment for Satan and for his angels. How much worse will it be? And the fact that it goes on and on for eternity. In Matthew 13, we flip back there, Matthew 13, and in verse 49, it says, "So it will be at the end of the age, the angels will come forth and take out the wicked from among the righteous, and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. If you want to, you can also turn to Hebrews chapter 10. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 26, it says, "For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a terrifying expectation of judgment and the fury of a fire which will consume the adversaries." Just drawing from those two passages, what we know of hell is that for eternity, there's weeping, there's a pain so intense that you're gnashing of your teeth. Like, have you ever hurt yourself so bad that your face just contorts and just does some weird thing that it doesn't make any sense, but you're just trying to ease the pain somehow? And so, you know, you're doing this weird thing with your jaw, and it doesn't really help, but you think it will. That's kind of the idea that's being conveyed there. There's torment going on, and there's no relief. And so it's just weeping, and just your body screaming out for some sort of relief that never will come. And then with the Hebrews passage, a terrifying expectation of judgment. It's a serious stuff. There's massive implications for those of us that don't fix the issue of sin lingering in our life. This isn't something that we just hope that our good outweighs our bad. I think a lot of people have that idea that if we're moral and we're upright and we believe in Jesus, that he's going to wash away everything without any effort on our part. But he's the one telling us to get rid of it. So how do we rationalize that? We have to get rid of it. The other point that I'll say from that is just fire's hot. You put your hand near something that's got some good embers on it, and it's not just the heat. Like, it's a dry heat. And Maybe I'm just dumb and I linger way too long, but you leave it long enough and your bones ache. It penetrates to your bones. It's not a good feeling. Just putting my hand over that fire for, you know, 15, 20 seconds just to see how tough I am makes me just think, I couldn't last 5 minutes in hell. Hell's not a temporary thing. If you're in hell, you're there forever. It's a pretty sombering thought that I definitely don't think about enough. We ought to scare ourselves straight, in a sense, of realizing what's at stake. Eternal bliss with God in his presence, light and life and all things that are good, definitely should motivate us to want to be there. I don't know that there's anything wrong with saying that not wanting to be in hell is any less of a motivator. I think we need to have a healthy balance of both. But we definitely don't need to neglect the other. In our class this morning, in the Bible class period, in Philippians 2, it talks about this passage where it says to work out your own salvation. And it says to work it out with fear and trembling. I think there's an element of realizing the ultimate stakes in that passage. That we're wrestling with making sure that we are saved, that we're doing what we're commanded to do, that we have a love for God that strives us and leads us to righteousness. Because we're afraid of the outcome. We don't. It's a sobering thought for sure. Two quick passages just to hammer that home. In Revelation 20 and verse 10, we alluded to some of this already. Revelation 20 and 10, "The devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever." And then in Revelation 21 and verse 8, says, "But for the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers and the immoral persons, the sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." So we end the lesson kind of on a gloomy point there, but I feel that it's a strong point that needed to be made. The stakes are real. The stakes are permanent. It's one or the other for forever. I know where I want to be. This morning, as we've gone through this, maybe you've realized that you've got some sin in your life and you've just kind of been ripping the leaves off. Maybe you realize that you need to get to the root and cast that away from you. I'd encourage you to do it. And if you need help, ask for it. Everyone here will be more than glad to do anything that we can to help each other out. Maybe you've been struggling with whether or not you're saved, whether you left the Lord completely and you're just kind of going through the motions, or maybe you've never made that first step, made that first commitment to Him. Whatever the case be this afternoon, we're eager and willing to assist you in any way if you let that be known. We're going to sing a song of invitation to encourage us. Let's all sing out and have a good rest of the day otherwise. Jeremy?